Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. Stu, interesting Saturday. I got back from Michigan, got to see the Wolverines up close in an entertaining game against Maryland. But I think we should start out in the state of Kansas, where all of a sudden both schools are very good, or at least seem to be pretty good in football. And we haven't been able to say that about one of them in a long time. We've touched on the Jayhawks and Lions cycled a little bit. We'll get into them more. But one of the subplots of this podcast for a while has been Adrian Martinez. So please, now, are you on the bandwagon?
I feel like I joined the bandwagon when I picked Kansas State to win the Big 12 this preseason. He just needed a fresh start. You know, and when he picked Kansas State, I thought, you know, that could work, because I think Chris Klieman's a really good coach. And as we suspected and now know for sure, that was quite the dysfunctional program he was playing in before. But I just wish I hadn't hopped off the bandwagon after they lost to Tulane last week. It was quite the turnaround from scoring 10 points against Tulane to going into Norman and putting up 44, was it? 44, something like that.
34 was the
score.
But five total touchdowns, four on the ground, really good through the air. I mean,
and the 55-yard run on 3rd and 16, just the icing on the cake. I don't remember every Nebraska performance. I'm not an encyclopedic recall on that, but I got to think that was the best performance of his career.
Well, especially there, right? I mean, Oklahoma was riding high. They just smashed Adrian's old school in Lincoln. Right before that run, he made he basically breaks away from contain. There's like four guys around him, and then there's somebody who looks like he's going to catch him as he's chased to his left, and he shows that speed. And then instead of just taking off, he flips it. It's a really nice touch, probably gets a 20-yard completion. And I was like, those two plays, the one you talked to, the one I just spoke to, I think are a big reason why we thought he was going to be a great fit at Nebraska. And look, I mean, I think you saw some emotion come out of him. Everything I've heard from behind the scenes is that, you know, like, he's handled a lot of really challenging situations, both football related and not football related, with grace and maturity. And he always seemed like a guy who was much more mature than his years. And so I felt really good for him to see it. As we've talked about here, we're both huge Deuce Vaughn fans. There's some amazing stuff Deuce Vaughn does in that game too, to keep the chains moving and really to keep Oklahoma on their heels. I mean, it wasn't like Dylan Gabriel was really good. I mean, 330 yards, passing, four touchdowns. They ran the ball really well with Eric Gray. Like, the Sooners offense was strong, but I just thought what you saw from Adrian Martinez, you know, they completed more than, I think, 50% on third down, and it was a very, very entertaining game. I'm sitting, like, you know, pretty much our whole crew was flying back, and that was the game that we were just like, you know, that and the A&M, and we'll get to the A&M game, because there was two, you know, especially wild moments in that game, but It was a fun Saturday. I don't feel like I was shocked that Oklahoma went down at home, just because I don't know if we were all the way in on buying in on Oklahoma. And they looked impressive, but Nebraska is such a mess right now. I don't know if I would read too much into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I too thought Oklahoma looked really good against Nebraska. And you're like, but then you're like, oh, wait a minute, Nebraska might just be absolutely terrible. And I think that it might have been unrealistic to think that Brent Venables could come in and just immediately turn that defense around. Oklahoma has not been known for defense for many years. But look, Adrian Martinez might have either this was a one-time thing, or the first three games of the season, Chris Klieman was just hustling Oklahoma. It was all a long con. Literally the week before, he was 21 of 31 for 150 yards and ran for 59. This was quite the the breakout performance. And if he's going to play like that this year, more often than not, and like you said, Deuce Vaughn is a lot to handle, they could be pretty good. But the thing I'm struck by right now is I think there's a lot of teams in the Big 12 that are pretty good. I haven't seen a team in the Big 12 really that is bad necessarily. And that includes the mighty Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah, 4-0. Jalen Daniels, people now know who he is. He actually played last year, played in high school, not far from where I live, really close. And he's one of these guys that you'd hear some buzz from the KU people you knew. And then you're like, okay, he's, you know, I don't know if he's a Todd Reesing 2.0 kind of thing. I mean, that's where it feels a little bit of like the guy who came from a quarterback hotbed was kind of overshadowed. Reesing was from Texas and just, you know, didn't have the ideal measurables, but was a really good college quarterback for Mark Mangino. Jalen Daniels, obviously in a quarterback hotbed in Southern California, and kind of had to battle his way to the top of the depth chart. Our buddy Max Olson had a nice story on him a few days ago. And he, like, they're really good. There's just no, you know, like what you're seeing against Mike Elko at Duke. I mean, he's one of the smartest defensive minds in college football. I think you look at what Kansas is right now. I would be skeptical to jump in and say, yeah, I think they can win the conference. But this conference feels so up for grabs. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think there's anybody who's really bad. I watched West Virginia the other night against Virginia Tech. Now, Virginia Tech may be really bad, but like they went in there and they just smashed them. You know, JT Daniels looks pretty good at West Virginia, and they have a lot of weapons on offense.
Good win for Texas Tech yesterday over the Longhorns. TCU, they're maybe a little bit harder to read, but they beat SMU. I think Oklahoma State's still really good. Maybe the one team I'm not entirely sure about is Iowa State, but anyway, yeah, wide open. I assume Kansas will come back to earth a little bit at some point. You don't necessarily see a team like that that was just so bad for so long rise up quite that dramatically. But I mean, I'm ready to put them in a bowl game at the very least, which that would seem like a, if you had said that before the season, people would have checked you into a mental hospital. So
let me ask you a question. This is probably a question for our listeners, probably better served. Maybe you know the answer, but I don't. Is it in fact mathematically possible for an entire conference to be bowl eligible?
Yeah, I think so. If everybody
is like 7-5, I guess.
Well, I mean, first of all, it depends on if you went 3-0 in the non-conference. Like if you go 3-0 in the non-conference, I mean, if a bunch of teams that went 3-0 in the conference go 3-6 in conference play. Yeah, that would mean that.
Like Texas and West Virginia, obviously they both had conference losses out of that. And maybe
somebody will go 5-7. But I don't, you know, compared to most, I mean, every league, every other league has teams at the bottom that are terrible. It's concluding quite a few. And there's the Pac-12, which we're going to talk about later. It has some really good teams at the top and some absolutely brutal teams at the bottom. But I don't see that in the Big 12. So Max, our Big 12 guru, texted me, I think jokingly last night, Kansas State in Arlington at the end of the year. Thoughts?
You know what? I think the folks in the state of Texas and Oklahoma probably wouldn't like the discussion on that. But at this point, it doesn't seem very far-fetched. If you watched yesterday, like, I don't think there's anybody else who I'd sit there and go, oh, yeah, that's a program that, like, seems like they have a way clear talent advantage, you know? Like, Oklahoma State's sitting there 3-0. I think Spencer Sanders is really good. They're going to play at
Yeah, the they're the ones you don't want to sleep on, I think.
Yeah, the only thing is, it's like, I mean, so far they haven't really played anybody. And now they're going to play Baylor on the road. So maybe we'll find out more about them. But I don't know. It's a very interesting conference. I don't know if anybody's a legit top 10 team, but almost everybody feels like they could be.
I wouldn't say nobody's a legit top 10 team. I don't know that at the end of the day, anybody's going to go to the playoffs. I think they're all going to beat each other.
I don't think who would you say is a legit top 10 team, you think?
Well, I think Oklahoma State could be, but like you said, I'd like to see them, you know, I'm not writing off Oklahoma. I don't think Oklahoma, you know, You think it's that preposterous that Oklahoma would turn around and finish in the top 10 still, or that Kansas State would finish in the top? Like somebody will finish in the top 10, probably more than one. But
my guess is hard to forecast. There will be nobody in the regular season who will be 10-2 or better.
Nobody in the regular season will be 10. Well, if that happens, and I'm not saying it wouldn't, then people are just going to be like, oh, that's a totally mediocre conference, which I would beg to differ.
Yeah, but I would too. It's a very competitive league.
The SEC, assumed, obviously widely assumed to be a two-team conference, but a couple of interesting games yesterday.
Even the games that weren't, that didn't matter in the top 25, like the Missouri-Auburn game.
Oh, yeah, that was fascinating.
It was the most bizarre game, I think. I mean, let's get to that quick, okay? So in the backdrop of Brian Harsin's job seemingly hanging in the balance, what you have is they're up 14-0. They're playing Mizzou. Mizzou's not very good. And then all of a sudden it's tied 14-14. And it feels like Brian Harsin goes for it on 4th-and-1 at the Mizzou 29. That's a good field goal kicker.
With less than 2 minutes left for the chance to take the lead,
they get stuffed. So instead of taking the lead, they get stuffed, and now Mizzou has the ball. Mizzou hits a big play, gets inside the five, and basically kneels on the ball to set up their kicker. And their kicker for 26 yards out misses wide right. So now the game goes into overtime. Then there is the play in Auburn. I believe there's an interception, but it gets overturned on Auburn's first possession. Then Auburn misses the field goal, but there's a penalty on that. So now it's 5 yards closer. Carlson hits that. So now they're up by three. So when you think, okay, first, they're sure to make the field goal in regulation. So that's going to be the end of Auburn. Then you think, okay, there's an interception. That's going to be the end of Auburn. Then he misses the field goal. Okay, that's going to be the end. So that's three. Then he makes it. So now it's only three. And Mizzou hits a big run. The guy's seemingly set up like at the 1 yard line, but he fumbles. And
Auburn, he was about to run into the end zone untouched, and also untouched, extends his arm and just drops it into the end zone. Touchback. Auburn wins.
It's the craziest way for, like, if you're an Auburn fan, I think you're like, maybe they won't be able to fire him tomorrow.
Would you agree that if Nathaniel Pete, the transfer from Stanford, if he doesn't fumble, like, they might have fired Brian Harsin coming off the field, if for nothing else, that 4th-and-1 call.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just and this is in the backdrop of last week getting blown out by Penn State. And just, I think the reality is, and we got into this on our Big Noon show, you know, they're going to have to pay him over $15 million. They're going to have to pay it in a hurry, or a big chunk of it. But I just feel like that place, they're not supporting him. It just seems like a really bad from the start.
Is there any part of you that thought when he, because I think the 4th-and-1 thing was just an absolutely insane decision, that he's like, let's just get this over with and give me my $15 million?
I don't know. The one thing it reminded me a little bit of was when Coach O was at Ole Miss, they had the Egg Bowl game. They're up 14-0. And I think he knew they wanted to fire him. And I think in the back of his head, he probably is thinking, we're going to beat them. We're going to pick up this fourth down, and we're going to blow out our rival and beat them by, 21 or 28 points. And then it'll be hard for them to fire me. Now, I don't think Brian Harsin was like, oh, I'm going to get this first down and we're going to make such a statement here, win. But I just think it was like, hey, I'm going to show I'm sending a message to my team. And I don't want to say it entirely backfired, because they ended up still winning the game somehow, but just a crazy, the whole thing is crazy. It's the most Auburn situation. And, we can talk about Auburn, where they go from here, in subsequent podcasts.
But, and Auburn has this history of these miraculous wins. Credit to John Talty, Alabama.AL.com, who said it on Twitter, they were saved by Auburn Jesus. They're miracle after miracle at Jordan Air. But at the end of the day, Auburn, I don't think, will be a factor in the SEC. Tennessee, gets the Florida monkey off its back. Hendon Hooker, another phenomenal game. And they were a disaster almost struck at the end when Florida recovered the onside kick. But They weren't able to pull it off. Tennessee, I'm just blown away by, if you remember, like they were awful by the end of the Jeremy Pruitt era. They've got this scandal going on. You think, what a train wreck. And Josh Heupel comes in, and if nothing else, they are nationally relevant, and they have a really exciting offense. Now, Anthony Richardson, who it appears is going to be quite the roller coaster this season.
And he's a young quarterback, so maybe yeah. That's not shocking. So.
He went for way over 500 yards, didn't put a lot of confidence in the Tennessee defense. My question to you is, I have a two-part question. Is Tennessee the third best team in the SEC? And if so, could they beat either Alabama or Georgia? They play both of them.
You know, they have such an explosive offense. You know, remember, they were doing that without Cedric Tillman, who's their best receiver. Could they beat them? Yeah. I mean, look, they're going to have to go play Georgia and Athens. I don't really love that matchup for them. The other thing that I don't love for them is they're doing it right after playing Kentucky, and Kentucky's pretty physical. So it's like, that's not a great, you know, to me, that's the worst possible timing for them to get them, short of them having the Alabama game, which, by the way, they only have Alabama a few weeks before Kentucky. So I don't know. I think we're going to find out way more about Tennessee over the next month, because they got to go to Baton Rouge next week. Then they have Alabama. Then it's a, you know, it's a cupcake with Tennessee Martin, then Kentucky, and at Georgia. So let's look at that stretch. That's five games. We're going to obviously give them Tennessee Martin. I'd be surprised if they're better than 3-2 out of that stretch.
That might be the ceiling, because that defense is like they could lose to somebody. I mean, Kentucky's not sorry the team to take advantage of that, but you know, I don't know. It's going to be really like, the one that interests me. I think Georgia will destroy them, but you know, Alabama is a little bit vulnerable this year, and they're going to Knoxville. That place will be a cauldron. It's been a long time since Tennessee. They play every year, and it has been a long, I can't even remember the last time it was even a competitive game.
I can remember when it was competitive, when Lane Kiffin almost beat them the one year he was
there. Yeah, that was
a long time ago, though.
I don't think Butch came close. Certainly Jeremy Pruitt didn't. So that will be an interesting one. That is also, I believe, the week after the Alabama A&M game that I think we agree is probably Nick Saban is probably going to treat with particular attention.
Now they do get a bye week before they have to go to LSU. So I think that's a good time to have the bye week to kind of refocus after an emotional win.
Well, if Tennessee's not the third best team, and I'm not saying they aren't, but A&M was expected to be in that mix. Then they had two clunkers. I give them credit for showing some life, great game from a great running game. They're still not doing much in the passing game. But, man, you talked about it earlier. Have you ever seen a game end on a field goal, game-winning field goal attempt, hitting the top of the upright, bouncing straight up into the air by like 20 feet, and then coming back into the end zone, A&M wins?
I don't even think A&M's quarterback's dad could pull off a trick shot like the kicker ended up doing. I mean, it was just – like when I saw it happen, I'm looking at it on a small screen. I'm like, did that just hit the top? Because it was just such a, like, you think it's going to clear it, and then it doesn't. And, you know, if it goes over the top, then all of a sudden it gets to be an interesting, you know, call of what happened there. But, man, between that and the play where KJ Jefferson tries to reach the ball over the goal line, gets stripped, then you think that the Arkansas player has corralled, and I thought it was, I was about to say, look, they stopped forward progress, and then it basically turns into a lateral that becomes a huge turning point, I thought, in the game. Because at that point, it felt like Arkansas was just clearly the better team. I give credit to A&M because I think they showed a lot of resilience there. And we'll see. I mean, I definitely do not – like, if you ask me who do I think is better, Tennessee or A&M, I would definitely say Tennessee. But, you know, A&M has found a way to be 3-1. And look, it's a good question. Who is the third best team? We don't know enough about Ole Miss at this point. We don't know enough about Kentucky.
That's a good point. Ole Miss, I have barely seen any of Ole Miss this year. They are 4-0. you know, obviously we think they're top 15-ish kind of team, but I've barely seen any of them because they play Troy, Central Arkansas, Georgia Tech, and Tulsa. The Tulsa game was a little tougher than expected yesterday. Jackson Dart is not, it's not like he's gone in there and is just tearing it up. So Zach Evans is. So is it possible they're the third best team? Yeah, but we haven't really got a chance to measure
Kentucky, that. Kentucky went into the swamp and their defense looked really good. And they, we know they have a playmaker quarterback. I mean, would you give any credence to Kentucky being the third best team?
Yes, I would. But I just don't, when they play Tennessee, I just don't think Kentucky is going to be able to match them offensively. They're better offensively than they used to be, but that's still not, you know, that's not, that's, are you really going to be able to keep up with Hendon Hooker, who, by the way, the new athletic Heisman straw poll will come out on Tuesday, I believe. Hendon Hooker's got to be at or near the top at this point, right?
I don't know if he'd be at the top. I think he would be. I think he would certainly be there. But I don't know. I mean, look, Caleb Williams, I don't want to say he came back to reality, but like their offense looked way different. Oregon State gave them all sorts of problems. Caleb was not sharp at all. I think that's going to, I don't want to say cause people to pump the brakes a little bit on the USC Caleb bandwagon. But, you know, it's an interesting mix because you know, yesterday, Georgia, you know, did not like, that was the first time, that was the closest thing we've seen to like a little bit of a clunker performance against Kent State. And, you know, Stetson Bennett, I think people were looking at him as a Heisman guy. I don't think CJ Stroud did anything to remove himself from being the favorite. So I would, is it potentially possible for Hendon Hooker to win a Heisman? Certainly with the path of teams they play.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to beat one or both of those teams. You mentioned Stetson Bennett. I think the Heisman candidate for Georgia is Brock Bowers because Heisman voters love somebody who plays a unique role, right? Remember Jabril Peppers made it as a finalist because every week ESPN would show how many snaps he played at all these different positions. I think that it's fascinating what they're doing with him. He was a running back in high school, and though he is a tight end and he's a great pass catcher, in the last 2 weeks, he has scored rushing touchdowns. Todd Monken is not afraid to use him in that area. I mean, that sounds crazy, a tight end to win the Heisman, but if we assume that Georgia will be number one, if they end up running the table and being number one for the whole season in the regular season, like somebody from Georgia is going to be in New York. And I think it might be him.
Maybe so. I mean, I don't know if I would say, you know, he's definitely an interesting player in how they're using him. And I also think what Monken is doing is smart for a couple of reasons. You know, it's like, I also think it is raising his profile because he's being very creative.
Yep.
You know, I think it's hard to when you on a defensive minded head coach with the talent they have. I mean, they're not asking him to go turn into air raid or anything like that, or doing what Lincoln Riley's doing, but to find creative ways to utilize your best offensive weapon, I think is really good. Look, if Georgia Tech comes open very soon, you know, if you're Georgia Tech, you'd say, hey, this guy's kind of right down the road, and he's had success as at least a group of five head coach. There'll be a little more buzz about him now. He certainly helped them win a national title last year with Stetson Bennett. So I think it's a kind of a two-pronged thing. And also it gives defenses a lot more problems, certainly.
All right. You mentioned Caleb Williams. I knew that Oregon State game would be tough going to Corvallis.
But did you think it'd be tough the way it was?
No, that's the thing. If you told me Oregon State was going to win 38-35, I would have believed you. But it was a defensive struggle. And Caleb Williams, for most of that game, just looked off. He just I got to give a lot of credit to Oregon State. They bottled up Jordan Addison nearly the entire game. Unfortunately, though, not on the most important play, that touchdown pass that put them up ahead. And then Oregon State, something about USC's defense, maybe you have some insight into this year is just phenomenal at intercepting passes. And they had four last night, including the one that sealed the game. Let me just take a quick look here at the Nash. I have to assume they're number one, but let's take a quick look. Indeed, leading the country with 11 interceptions. Because we know it's not a elite defense by any means. It's not a lot of high-end talent on that defense. But if you can take the ball away, then that's going to help make up for it. But they were very fortunate to win in Corvallis. They came back to earth a little bit. Now, earlier Saturday, there was an absolutely wild game in the Pac-12 where Oregon snatched the victory away from Washington State in the most heartbreaking fashion I think I could see. Washington State was winning the whole game. And then Bo Nix to Troy Franklin, 50-yard touchdown to take the lead. And then Cam Ward throws a pick six on a screen pass. Oregon wins. That's a gut punch for the Cougars. They were right there on the brink of their second top 25 win already. There are a lot of teams that could win the Pac-12, right?
Yeah, I know we've had this conversation. We had this conversation on Big Noon yesterday, whether the Pac-12 is a lot better than we thought it was or is coming in. And I think it's going to be hard to get much more of a ceiling on it, because I think what happened yesterday or last night, to circle back to USC for a bit, is I think it kind of exposed some people to okay, USC is not like, and everybody's maybe entitled to like one off performance and credit to Oregon State, but that definitely nobody saw them getting slowed down and getting like their wings clipped like that. Right. So right. I think it's going to be hard for the league itself. You know, it feels a little bit like the Big 12, except the Pac-12 has some dregs in there at the bottom, which the Big 12 does not. You know, Colorado is horrible. Arizona State is horrible. Stanford is
horrible,
pretty close to horrible right now. So I think that takes it a little bit, but good on Bo Nix. I did not think he was going to have two good performances in a row, especially one, the second one on the road.
And he had a 95-yard pick six in the first half. So you think, okay, it's the Bo Nix experience all over again. But Oregon played really well in the second half.
And yeah, and I think, look, I think that they're I still think they're going to stumble around a bit more and probably be like 8-4-ish. But if you had said, going in, I mean, look, this is three touchdowns, one pick on the road. He completed 75% of his passes and threw for 428 yards. Like, you know who could use pretty that good right now? Brian Harsin.
There's a little bit of a kind of like we described with Adrian Martinez, Bo Nix getting a fresh start, shaking off that Georgia game, playing a lot better. Now, Washington, again, Michael Penix, again, did whatever they wanted against Stanford last night. Utah, don't forget about Utah. They clobbered Arizona State. Any of USC, Washington State, Oregon, Utah, who am I for? UCLA is undefeated. Any of them I could see getting to the Pac-12 title game, especially with no divisions.
Agree. UCLA will get Washington in the Rose Bowl this Friday. Should be a very interesting game right now, because right now UCLA has, the best team they've probably played so far is not a Pac-12 team. It's probably South Alabama. So we'll see what, I watched a bunch of Washington last night against Stanford. I got to admit, I was like dozing off at the end of it, but, I don't know. Let me ask you this. So we'll just kind of finish on the Pac-12 on this. Do you think if you were voting in the Pac, for your top 10, did you drop USC down at all?
I don't like to penalize teams for close wins on the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oregon State is pretty good, and you still went in there and won. I just think it's a little bit of a reality check that offense is not necessarily going to score 40, 50 points every week. A lot of credit to Oregon State's DBs, because USC's got some good receivers and guys just weren't getting open. And I think you could see Caleb Williams getting really frustrated. What I would say is, what if I were a voter, is I would not have USC as the highest Pac-12 team. That would be Washington. I think they deserve to be there right now.
Fair enough. By the way, the Washington win after last week, smashing Michigan State. Michigan State had a rough Saturday right now.
Yeah. That it's amazing how quickly you can go from, I believe Michigan State was number 11 in the country going into that that Washington game. And then after getting blown out there, and then Minnesota dominated them about as badly as a team can dominate somebody. At one point, it was like 223 yards to one. Clearly, Michigan State has issues and is not going to be anything close to the number 11 team in the country this year. And credit to the Gophers. Tanner Morgan looks like 2019 Tanner Morgan, not the guy who lost to Bowling Green last year.
You know what? You know why he might look that way? Because Kirk Shiroka's back as his offense
coordinator. That's absolutely why. I mean, I was very high in the Gophers coming into the season because of that, because he's back. And it looked just like, I mean, if you watched it, he's running those RPOs. He's pulling it when he should. I will say Michigan State at this point, at some point, Mel Tucker is going to have to figure out his secondary. It's 2 years in a row now, but
so especially as a guy who was a lifelong secondary coach,
transfer portal hasn't done enough there.
Can I, before we move off the Big Ten for a second, interesting thing. So obviously I saw Blake Corum in person. I was super impressed by him as a running back. The Big Ten has a lot of good running backs right now. Mo Ibrahim went off yesterday. He's second in the country in rushing. The guy who leads it is Chase Brown, who is from Illinois. He was one of my freaks list guys. He's one of the Brown twins who's, you know, he's a Canadian kid who's very explosive. And I feel like one of the more underrated guys, but then you get past him. We know about Braylon Allen. He's number five in the country. And then you get Nebraska and Anthony Grant. He's actually number 10, five of the top 10 rushers in the country are actually Big Ten running backs. And none of them are playing at Ohio State. And none of them are the five-star freshman.
Right, but
Nick Singleton.
None of them are playing at Ohio State because Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams are just sharing.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, like, yeah,
they were both good against Wisconsin.
You know, Mo and Brown are 1-2 in the country right now. And it feels like they have both a chance. Now, it's early, but to be 2,000 yards backs this season. And that's not, you know, who knows what Braylon Allen goes on and does.
So when seeing Michigan up close, and the Maryland game was a lot tougher than their first three, but they won. And, you know, and Blake Corum had that huge game. Are they as good as you thought they were? Not as good as you thought they were?
I think they are, because Maryland has a lot of firepower. No, I don't think Dante Demas is on a pitch count right now. He's not I don't know if he's at 100%, but, you know, you have a talented quarterback with a bunch of really good receivers. I think they're pretty good in the secondary too. I saw some good things from JJ McCarthy. There was a play where he had the ball for what felt like 20 seconds, scrambling around on a third and long, and he actually picked up the first down with his legs. I mean, just he gives them the opportunity to do certain things that Cade just couldn't do. His arm is much better. He's just got a lot more juice in him, you know, and especially as a threat running and scrambling. They were down without their best tight end, Eric All. They were, you know, down at receiver a little bit. Their offensive line's good. I think they're, you know, their secondary, I think, is going to be a little bit of a challenge. You know, certainly, you know, Ohio State will present that problem. I think Penn State could present some problems. We actually have them this week at Iowa coming up. Now, Iowa's offense isn't very good, but I if you said to me right now, do you think Michigan's a top five team? I would say absolutely. After seeing them, yes, I would.
Back to the podcast in a second, but Bruce, even this late into the spring, you know, we're still seeing college football programs hiring staff members, support staff members, analysts, GAs, whatnot. Hope they've been using LinkedIn Jobs, because if you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to post your job for free at linkedin.com/audible. That's linkedin.com/audible to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Number five, Clemson, who I want to talk about. One, a great win over Wake Forest, a very dramatic win over Wake Forest. This was, if you took Clemson from the last 6 years and reversed it, this is what you would get. DJ, I think that was the best game of his career, certainly the best since his freshman year. He was just, you know, putting the ball exactly where you should put it and not looking at all like the guy who struggled so much last year. But you just do not expect to see a Clemson defense get torched over and over and over again as they did by Sam Hartman. They had some injuries in their secondary, so some younger guys were playing. But it was, you know, my hesitation on Clemson and why I didn't think they could return to being a playoff contender was the offense. And now it's like, okay, yeah, they could do that. Look at that. The offense looks a lot better. And then the defense takes a big step back.
Yeah, look, let's remember, you have a first-time defensive coordinator. I think that's a challenge. There's so much talent in the front seven where you think, okay, how's this gonna work? But Sam Hartman was lighting them up yesterday, right up till, you know, till the end of the game. And, you know, there were plays under pressure and everything. I thought he was terrific. You know, again, this was interesting to me just because if you look at the last four meetings between these two schools, Wake Forest had lost by an average of 39 points a game. Now, that number started out at five years ago, they lost by 60. And then I think they lost by like 50. And then it was like the last two were like in the 20s. So they've clearly, you know, kind of gotten a lot closer to each other. But as you said, I agree. DJ is playing, you know, you watched that opener against Georgia Tech and it looked like there was a scramble he made that kind of like, okay, you know, like he made a couple of improvised plays where it kind of settled him down and maybe boosted his confidence a little bit. And I think because of that, you know, I'm still not thinking like this was my fourth playoff team and I didn't feel great about it. I still don't, but I think he's just settling down and you see him growing and growing with these games. And to do that on the road in a game where it was a shootout, I don't think that happens if he's in this situation last year. I just don't. I don't think they would have responded the same way.
No, and look, Wake's defense has been their weakness for a long, long time. So you take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, but I don't know. The way he was throwing it, he's putting an exact right spot for his receivers. Of course, if he's successful, that opens some possibilities for Will Shipley. Look, they got to turn around this week and play NC State. NC State's a top 15 team. They beat Clemson last year.
They have better players on defense than Wake Forest.
They do. They do. If Clemson wins that, then you're looking at, okay, this could be a playoff run, except for one thing, Bruce. Florida State looks really good to me. They just annihilated BC. I wasn't expecting Jordan Travis to come back so quick. He looked like he was in a walking boot on the sideline after when he got hurt in the Louisville game. He came back, he shredded them. I just think they're really talented. And now, you know, and Clemson has had distanced themselves from Florida State for many, many years. But in a, I would say, normal world, that should be a competitive rivalry.
Yeah, I feel like they've turned the corner. Again, you and I have talked way too much probably about those like Sunday or Monday opening week games where you probably can read too much into a performance. But yeah, this definitely been progress. On the flip side, the Florida State's other big rival, Miami, had a terrible loss against Middle Tennessee. They were really bad on defense yesterday. They were really sputtering on offense. I don't know if it was.
I think you're being generous when you say they were really bad on defense. I mean, that was, I actually found myself gravitating toward that game in that window probably the most of any game in that window because it was so surreal. And look, credit to Middle Tennessee. They've been a good mid-major program for a long time. They go to bowl games almost every year, but they had never beaten a top 25 team in the history of their program. You can debate whether Miami should have been ranked. And Middle Tennessee is, there were, you know, they are just dropping balls over the heads of Miami secondary. They had like a 98-yard pass, an 89-yard pass, a 71-yard pass. This was quite the reality check for Mario Cristobal that he's got a long way to go. I mean, that was just a everything that could go wrong. And the crazy thing is, this is the third time in the last few years. I mean, they lost to Louisiana Tech in a bowl game. They lost to FIU a couple years ago. This is something.
Here's the reality, just from seeing them this summer in in August in practice. I'm not saying they're Nebraska, but like when you look at them, their receivers are really average. Their backs are okay. You know, I think people looked at the quarterback last year because he had such a surprising run and he did some really good things, but. I don't know when anybody, if you're an NFL scout, you go there and go, okay, that guy's a first round pick. And this guy's, that's not this roster.
And yet they were picked to win their division.
I think it speaks to what's in that division,
though. Yeah. That and like just the benefit of the doubt, even 20 years after their glory years, they always just get the benefit of the doubt because they're Miami. But how does that happen? How does Miami, in one of the biggest hotbeds in the country, get to have you said not quite Nebraska, but that bad a roster?
They missed on recruits a lot. They just had a lot of bad evaluations, and I think it also didn't help that you had a coach who was on the hot seat for a while there before going in. But like for Miami to be so underwhelming at receiver, I think like with just looking at what they had, and then you look, just not a lot of difference makers. I mean, I thought they were an 8-4 team, but you look at that division that they're in. Virginia Tech, they were horrible the other day, right? Then you have Duke.
Virginia's not good.
North Carolina gives up tons of yards.
North Carolina's defense is horrendous. Notre Dame went from, everybody wanted to panic and fire Tommy Reese to lighting it up against that UNC defense.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech, I mean, it's only a matter of time before they pull the plug on Jeff Collins there.
And by matter of time, it looks like that'll be Monday. They've scheduled a special meeting. Pitt's still good, I think.
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. I don't know if I would go much more than that.
I don't think they're as good as they were last year, but they're not bad. And almost every other team in that division is bad. So, I don't know. I would actually say we're probably going to get Pitt back in the ACC title game. I just don't know who's going to come out of the other division, but it was just, and then whenever they would show a wide shot at the Miami game, it looked like there were 12 people in the stands, which is not unusual at that stadium, but it's just kind of a buzzkill because there's been a lot of enthusiasm since Mario Cristobal got hired and all the money they're pouring into that program. And John Ruiz is throwing NIL money around. And I think Tyler Van Dyke is kind of the face of his, of the life wallet. And that guy, he just looked, he's had a rough year and he got benched. And he doesn't seem comfortable in that scheme. And then you're saying he has no receivers. So, it's just, now it's the fourth game of his first year. Everybody's going to want to fire the guy now, but it's the fourth game of his first year. He needs time. He can recruit and he will. But and it's like kind of become a rite of passage. Every Miami coach now has one of these like inexplicable group of five losses. Group of five losses.
Let's say we get to our shout outs too.
I thought you were going to take a second to salute the Northwestern Wildcats for finishing 0-3 in the non-conference with losses.
Maybe that just means they're going to win the Big Ten West again.
And maybe so. All right. Yes. Go ahead. Shout out.
Why don't you go first?
All right. So it's been a long time since there was anybody exciting on offense for Cal football, right? Just that's not who Justin Wilcox teams are. They've got a true freshman running back, Jaden Ott, who was their highest ranked recruit in many years. He went off for 274 yards against Arizona, the third highest in school history and highest by any running back in FCS this season so far. True freshman. Again, my God, a freshman. Something for Cal fans to be excited about.
There you go. I'm going to circle back. My shout out is going to be Adrian Martinez. Again, just, I know we've talked about him so much. I just think that, like, to me, that's the main thing. For me, he was the story of the night, Saturday night, to see him have that stage. I don't know if they're going to end up winning the Big 12, as I think you predicted they would back in August, but I was just very happy for him, just because it feels like he's kind of been a punching bag at times, and I think it was good to at least see him shine on such a big stage.
And then let me just wrap by giving a shout out to Ralph Russo, frequent friend of the podcast from the AP. Scary moment at the Iowa Rutgers game last night in the press box after the game. One of the writers had a heart attack, and our man Ralph administered CPR until the paramedics could arrive. How about that?
Wait, I know nothing about this. What, this actually happened?
This actually happens. You missed a Slack message last night, apparently. I texted with Ralph. He was downplaying his role in it a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, he's Scott Dochterman, our Iowa writer, is one who told us about it. Ralph sprang into action and administered CPR, and I've never seen that. I can't imagine how terrifying that was. I guess I didn't know Ralph could do CPR, but, you know, maybe it's because he's married to somebody in the medical field. I don't know. But, like, I mean, Ralph's out there saving lives, Bruce.
Yeah. Maybe that means the Mets will win the World Series this year.
Yeah, maybe. Good, some good karma for him. By the way, I hope Aaron Judge hurries up and gets his home run so they don't have to keep cutting into college football games for it. You can send, so Wednesdays we do emails. Send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time.